and are in relationship to people of color, queer people, women. Those are the targeted groups in that list. And it's a very, or not very subtle way of saying we don't particularly care about delivering complex health care to those
we
people.
We have to leave it there. We thank you so much, Dr. Jack Halberstam of Columbia University and Dr. Rush Holt of the American Association for the Advancement of Science.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. The time now is 8 o'clock, and coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
For Portland Homeless Family Solutions on Tuesday, December 19th at the Doug Fir in Portland. Portland bands Foxy Lemon, Camp Crush, and The Get Ahead will play bluesy rock, new wave pop, and country-fied soul to benefit Portland Homeless Family Solutions, which helps families with children find housing. Again, that's a holiday fundraiser for Portland Homeless Family Solutions on Tuesday, December 19th at the Doug Fir, 830 East Burnside Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi, I'm Eileen with the Oregon Cultural Trust. As a KBOO donor, I know my gift supports access to great programming for everyone in Portland. Access to cultural programming is why KBOO receives grants from the Oregon Cultural Trust, and you can help. When you make a gift to KBOO, make a matching gift to the Oregon Cultural Trust by December 31st. Then you can use the cultural tax credit next year to reduce your state tax bill. It's true. And it's how KBOO supporters guarantee access to cultural programming in Portland and all around the state. Visit culturaltrust.org today to learn more before December 31st.
Yes, good morning. It's raining, it's windy, it's sort of warmer, and I'm alone. This is KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe ain't here, it's just Joe, and I really would like to hear from you. 231-8187. I'm going to have a kind of an open format. I got some things I definitely want to cover, but hey, you know what they are and you know why they're there. Primarily, the things I would like to touch upon are hard to talk about because they're mysterious. There's a huge black box called the budget. We don't know what's in it, but we do know that if you stick your hand in there, it's going to get nasty really fast. Is the Fetus Survival Act in there? Is the incredible gifts to the richest rich and the terrible hurts to the long range to the ordinary folks like you and I? Yeah, well, probably maybe the first, we don't know, but the second for sure. This is a budget unlike any in our history. No debate, no discussion, no hearings, no bipartisan involvement. Really creepy, really fascist, and really, really real. So that's something that we definitely can talk about. Anybody who knows something about the budget, maybe somebody knows something about the budget. I haven't been able to read it. I haven't even been able to get it in the mail. I haven't even been able to get it online. It's really, really, really weird. So it's the bad budget. And then there's the Mueller firing. Now, the president has said he's not going to fire the investigator investigating him and his people, which probably means he will. We have a crazy leader. We do. And he is extremely self-centered and extremely limited and unread and unlettered and uncaring and unusually stupid. This is all real. I'd love to have somebody call me up and say, oh no, Trump is a brilliant man. Look how much money he made. And then I would, of course, point out how most of it came because his daddy discriminated against persons of color in the public housing sphere and got lots and lots and lots of money. So that's the situation. My position on America, just like my position on the former Soviet Union, that is on Russia, these are two kleptocracies, different organizational structures, different histories, but places where the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, or as they say in the song, the poor get children. And all of that is happening in the face of an incredibly degrading or degraded environment. So, you know, scary stuff, not much fun. How can I make you laugh about it? I can't. I don't know what to do. Will you not call me and cheer me up? Here's your challenge. Tell me something either funny or good that's happening now somewhere in America, let's say, or, hey, in the world. I would love to hear from you. But if you don't have any something good to say, say something else. So, 231-8187. I am stuck in the world of the black hole budget. I am stuck in a world where we can't have high-speed trains. I am stuck in a world where most of what takes place in the way of services for the people face cuts under the federal budget, which is going to impact all of us at the state level. And mainly all of it is going to hurt so many of us. I am, of course, happy about what happened in Alabama. You can't fault that. That was pretty amusing. But then again, is it really reassuring when a child aggressor person finally doesn't get into the United States Senate? I guess that's a good sign, but should it even be a thing? 231-8187. The other thing I want to do, and I think it's important, is to remind you that as we move into this dark, dark winter, and as we consider the many, many issues that all of us face, and that could be maybe overwhelmingly daunting, that you use KBOO as an instrument of power for yourself. That doesn't just mean calling us, though we would love to have you do that. It also means, sorry to say this, that you need to give a hunk of change. Chunk of change to KBOO keeps the music going, keeps the news alive, and keeps information flowing. It's really important. Now, we do have callers, 231-8187. Who do we got? Larry, you're on the air.
Hey, Joe, I got one for you.
Go for it.
Last night on primetime CNN News, the Sirius news station, they had a fellow, they didn't give his military rank, but he worked in the military under the program looking at UFOs.
Oh, yes.
And he basically was saying that there are UFOs, there are aliens. He didn't use the word aliens. And so I'm just thinking, well, they're going to ease this on us. They're going to, they've known forever, and now they figured out, they're trying to figure out how they would ever let the population know without going into madness. And it's coming. So there is hope. The aliens are here, Joe.
So it's like coming through the air in the song we just played?
Yes.
Okay, well, thanks for the reminder that is a real possibility.
All right, you take care.
Yeah. So we're at the point in history where we're starting to look to the skies for salvation, and I think that's a little bit too Judeo-Christian for my taste, but hey, why not? As to the question of whether or not aliens have visited the Earth, well, yeah, sure, why not? Do they care about us? I don't know. Do we have a theory about it? Remember how vast the distances to the nearest stars are, and remember, too, that let's say they have some magic drive that brings them here really fast. That's I don't think so. Some kind of science beyond our knowledge. More to the point, yeah, maybe they've been looking around for a long, long time, but I have to say this, until they show up and do something amazing, I don't care. I just don't. I think that there's lots of things going on in the universe that we don't know about, and probably in that particular case, it won't matter, because right here at home, We got things that are so creepy, so weird, so scary, so infinitely dangerous right here in not just Earth, but at home here in the United States. We got a public that's largely ignorant. We got 30 to 40% of Americans who believe in things that cannot be true and who voted, likewise voted for the Trump, believing he would give them things he could not promise and should not promise and will not give. And now he's doing something like an assault on all of us, and we're all still going, what's up? Hey, I would love to hear something good, but I'm also willing to hear something bad. Main thing I want to do is hear from you. Last week we were dead on the air because the phone lines went down. What was that about? I don't know. Failure of the system? You bet. So it's an interesting situation here. It's an interesting situation there. It's an interesting situation everywhere. What we do know for sure, I believe. See, I say I believe because, really, yeah, maybe we don't know. That there is collusion between the United States, a government under Trump, and the government of Russia. And that's looking more and more likely. And I think that Mueller will be fired because he's getting very close to the Trump. And Trump has already said he isn't going to fire him. And usually when he says something, he does the opposite. So that's a thing to look forward to. And then there's the budget, the black box budget. Anybody who knows anything about it, who really knows something about it, ought to call us and tell us what the thing is that catches their attention. I can tell you this, the rich get richer, including Trump, and the medium rich don't do that well, and the poor get poorer, and healthcare is in danger, and every program that you care about, every program you're concerned about, environmental issues, all of this are up for grabs and are going down the tubes as this administration moves forward into the 19th century. 231-8187. Energy.
Hey there, Joe.
How you doing?
I got something good.
Okay, great. Good is good.
It's a little unusual, but it's real.
Okay.
I saw it on TED Talks.
Ah, TED Talk.
And it's a plutocrat who's warning the other plutocrats that they better watch out because the pitchforks are coming.
The pitchforks. I can remember the pitchforks well, in English history particularly, and then in French history. Yes, the pitchforks might be coming.
I think he's talking about, I don't know, the French Revolution or something.
Yeah, the French Revolution was a big pitchforker.
And then after that, the guillotines. For the people who let them eat cake.
Yes, you know, the guillotine's interesting. If you're going to have capital punishment, it's the only way to go. Sorry.
But this plutocrat, whose name is Nick Hanauer, he says that the other plutocrats better wake up because the wealthy are not the ones that create the jobs for the people. It's the middle class that does.
Well, I think there's a variety of sources for creation of jobs. And certainly the notion that if we reduce the taxes for the wealthy, there'll be more jobs. It's called trickle-down economics. It's been proven wrong countless times and is just a rationale for greed. Pardon me.
Of course. Do we really believe in trickle-down economics?
Well, those of us who know economics don't.
Yeah, like the economists who have degrees in that stuff.
Yeah.
But I really, for people to get a happy feeling in the midst of all that we're going through, I really recommend that you go on the YouTube and you type in Nick Hanauer. He's an American.
How do you spell that name?
H-A-N-A-E-U-R. It's a German name, I'm sure. But he's an American guy, and he is very coherent. And very calm.
Uh-huh.
And he's talking good stuff because he's not like the rest. I mean, I'm sure he's not the only plutocrat out there who is worried about the other greedy ones, the real greedy ones who are not paying attention. And if we all just take a listen to Nick Hanauer, they're probably going to wipe his TED Talk off the air because he's talking real stuff and good stuff that the plutocrats don't want to hear.
Well, I have no idea whether they... I don't even know how quickly TED Talks disappear into the ether. I think they're around forever, but I'm not sure.
Well, this one is against the plutocrats, and he's one himself. So, and also there's other factions out there. I don't know if you've heard, but there's several factions. Even last year, Terry Gross was talking about it on, you know, her show. That there are factions working very hard to see about getting Mr. T impeached.
Well, impeaching the president would help, but, you know, the beyond that, then there's Pence.
Right. Well,
and beyond Pence, there's Ryan. So, you know, it's it. What we really have here is a reactionary cabal of enormous significance and power that seems to still kind of control the Congress and will be able to put their own, always a man, guy in power in the White House. But, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing Trump run out of town on a rail. There's an old concept. Anyway, thanks a lot for the call.
Yeah, remember that Nick Hanauer guy, and please check it out. I'd love to hear you talk about him.
Sure. Thank you very much for the call.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right. Hi, this is KBOO. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe ain't here. I am. My name's Joe, and I want to hear from you. 231-8187, kind of open topic day. So if you have something on your mind that you think is important and you want to share it with us, you're more than welcome to do so. Molly, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Joe. Well, you first asked for some positives in all this midst of the negativity going on in our world. So I want to just put a heads up and a congratulations to Tarana Burke, who's finally making it onto the headlines. Amy Goodman had an interview with her, mentioned her this morning. She is the African-American woman responsible for the Me Too movement.
Right,
that
right.
Started back in 2006. Nobody heard about it till it came up. But when the women's movement started the day after Trump's election with the pussy hats, she was really the starter of that movement, I think, in many ways. And certainly when the Me Too movement came up with all the famous movie stars and everything, she wasn't mentioned. And it wasn't till the African-American women in the underground movement that helped elect to Doug Jones, that they were very sort of upset about her not being put on the cover of Time, and the African American women mobilized in a way that finally got up to us white women who happen to know a few African American women in our lives to the fact that she wasn't recognized and definitely should be, and now seems to be coming to the forefront where she deserves to be. And this is a fantastic grassroots movement that's happening in a positive way in our country right now. And that needs to be remembered in these dark times, because it's a truly great thing, and I'm sure it will spread to the African-American men as the women's, the We Can Do It women after the war had to mobilize and take things into power. I think that's happening now in our country with the African-American women, which is very exciting to me.
Okay, well, I really appreciate the call, and I agree with you. Yeah. And I do think, by the way, that that Time cover was not, it should have been, as you suggest, something more direct in support of the struggles of people of color and of women.
Right.
And I do thank you for the call.
Yeah, thank you for having the show.
Oh, my pleasure. Take care. 231-8187. It's open Mikey kind of time, and I would love to hear from you. I have mentioned two things, but there's no restriction here. The fact that I believe that Mueller will be fired from his investigation of the collusion between Trump administration people and campaign people and the Russians, particularly Putin, and the oligarchs that he works with. I assume that whenever Trump says something, he will do the opposite. So he said he wouldn't fire him, so I figure he will, and in the most dramatic way, I'm sure. And, of course, I would love to know, if anyone knows out there, any of the things that are for sure in the new budget bill. What does it actually look like? It was a gazillion pages of which everybody who's voting for it or voting against it acknowledges that they haven't had time to read it all. And, of course, there's been no hearings, no discussion. This is not democracy. This is kleptocracy. Let me hear from you, 231-8187. Harvey.
Hi, Joe, and top of the season to you and your vast KBOO audience.
Oh, yes, vast. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'd like to talk about the budget, but first I'd like to share a joke that I made up.
Okay, can we have it on the air?
Right, here it is. What do you get when you tickle a psychic?
What do you get when you tickle a psychic?
Yeah, you get a happy medium.
That's not bad.
Oh, thanks.
Well, you made that up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I believe that Trump is, the Trump tax bill is all about maintaining the status quo. And whenever we, the taxpayers, build up equity, build up wealth, which can be used to create a better world for most Americans, the political system, and I mean both parties, find a way to skim off the collective tax wealth and create a deficit. And the two ways to skim the taxpayer equity are squandering the money on things like war, and the second is running up the national debt. And when the wealth is swept away, social programs, education, healthcare, VA funding, programs for rebuilding infrastructure are left to fight over the scraps. And for instance, Ronald Reagan had his trickle-down economics, benefited the wealthy, and we were all, like you say, the rest trickled down to the rest of us. And the first President Bush, he had the war on drugs, and that created that took a lot of money and also started the prisons for profit going. And Clinton, he was lucky because he had he was present during the dot-com boom, but then he created NAFTA, which offshored American jobs and once again slashed our wealth. And President Bush started the war in Iraq and ran up the national debt to an incredible sum. And then when President Obama got in, you know, he was promising all kinds of rebuilding infrastructure. And then the banks stepped up and said, we need $700 billion. We're all going to go belly up. And so that money went to the banks. And, of course, a lot of the executives got bonuses. And in the Trump bill, we're going to be left with more than $1 trillion in debt and run up the national debt, and there's going to be false austerity programs leading to slashing of food stamps, cutting health care insurance for kids, reducing Social Security, and so I think that's what it's really about. It's maintaining the status quo, keeping the rich where they are, keeping the middle class struggling, and keeping the poor. That's what I think it's really all about, maintaining the status quo, and so making sure that no one breaks out of the structure as it's set up.
Okay, thank you very much for the call, and it's a very reasonable analysis, though I think it's even more reactionary than you're saying. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
I think I'll sing a song. Okay, here is a song from the old-fashioned Farmers Workers Alliance of the late 1800s, which later became a wobbly song, and I can't sing, so get ready to cover your ears. Oh, the banks are made of marble with a guard at every door. They're keeping there the money that the people struggled for. And that's all I'm going to sing. And now I'll take a call. 231-8187. Bill.
Oh, well, what a perfect to segue into the long memory and Utah Phillips and talking about the long struggle and how, yeah, we look back on 2017.
I'm glad you mentioned Utah Phillips, a great person. Sorry to see him go.
Yeah, definitely the great voice of the great Southwest, or the great West. And so, you look back at how awful 2016 was and all that misery and that sacrifice, and then to see how awful and how crazy we've gone in 2017. But I do see hope. I don't see hope from the corporate Democrats and their billionaire shills on this television saying how the Dems need to stop talking about millionaires, billionaires, class warfare, and how there's good, bright, shining hope in, like, the Justice Democrats, Democratic Socialists out there, and how it just need to mobilize because they're definitely the 1%, the kleptocracy, stealing everything they can because, frankly, they don't have the votes anymore, and they just... Russia may be one issue with the election, but the GOP solo elected in so many different ways that we need to regain our democracy and retake the planet back for our future. And I really appreciate all the great work you guys do on KBOO because you don't hear that on any other station. You don't hear that on commercial corporate media, and you definitely don't hear that from National Petroleum Radio.
Anyway, I appreciate the the compliment, and I want to hope that everybody will be supporting the station and keep up the work, and I hope all the people who agree or disagree with us give us a call. 231-8187. Who do we got? Dougie?
Yeah, I got... can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
2 points of what I know about this budget, this tax bill, and then also I was going to ask you something on climate change.
Sure.
What I do know is that people who make under $30,000 a year, I believe their taxes are going to go up immediately. If you make over $75,000 a year as a family, there's some things in there that might give you a sugar high temporarily for the next 5 years. And then the most drastic thing is that the corporate tax rate is going from 35% to 21%, basically almost cut in half, which will contribute more to not only inequality in the United States, but basically inequality around the world, because governments around the world are going to respond to the lowering of the corporate tax rate here, and it's going to create less social services and programs for the poor around the world. So it's basically a race to the bottom, and it just looks as if the world will experience more inequality, more plutocracy, oligarchy, and potentially more fascism in the future.
Well, and the other thing I would add to your list, I agree with everything you said, I would add that it's environmentally terrible. So
yeah, and I just watched a scientist on YouTube just this morning mm-hmm. that talked about how if we don't make drastic changes by 2025, there'll be no way that we'll be able to stop the world from hitting 2 degrees Celsius or 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. By, you know, in the very near future, which was set by the Paris Climate Accord. So with Donald Trump and ExxonMobil and the Koch brothers controlling the Republican Party, my question for you is, do you think that we'll be able to get it together in time to seriously avert the catastrophic consequences that lie ahead, you know, drought, famine, the coral reefs and the oceans dying, heat waves, wildfires, more hurricanes, tornadoes, typhoons. Do you think that we can get it together as a species, or do you think that we're just too damn stupid that we're just going to go ahead and let these people cook the planet and destroy the future of you know, for our kids and our kids' kids, just basically destroy humanity and life on Earth? Do you think we'll be able to get it together in time?
Well, let me. I'm gonna end your question. I'll take you off the air, but I will give you sort of an answer, which is not going to be satisfactory. The first part of it is, well, you never know. One of the great rules that actually I learned from reading Jean-Paul Sartre, of all people, is you don't know. You have to therefore, with goodwill and good intention, carrying on with the best you can. In terms of what's happening, it don't look good. Those of us who have children, or our children have children, or their children have children, those of us who plan for a future, who want to see a future that is healthy, rational, and good, we have an existential duty to struggle for what we believe in. We cannot know the tipping point in the good direction. We do know, and we already see, that we're tipping in a bad direction. So the duty of all of us is to engage as much as we can, as much of our lives, as much of our time, in struggles for the environment and in struggles for social justice. There's no other choice. Otherwise, we might as well just, watch daytime TV all the time. So that's where I'm at, and I cannot predict the future. I can say that there is a real climate crisis and that this administration seems to not be worried about it. I can also say that from what we can tell, things can get very bad before and if they get better. But again, the duty of everyone who is conscious and aware is to work hard, struggle hard to make things better. To not do that is what I often refer to out of some influence I had from, of all things, the Catholic Worker Party, an anarchist Catholic organization under the leadership of Ammon Hennessy and Dorothy Day, to avoid the sin, the absolute sin of despair. In other words, hope for the best, work for the best, and, you know, we'll see. 231-8187. Sean, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
God, I'm worn out just having listened to what I've heard so far.
Oh, no.
So,
it's still early, man.
I got a couple of great jokes for you. So
okay.
What do you get when you get a democracy?
What?
This.
No. Okay, next joke. That's terrible, man.
Okay, so that's my first one.
All right.
The second one is ultimately, nothing is going to come out of the investigations with Mueller because he's corrupt, and they're all corrupt. And the fact is that whether you're talking about China or whether you're talking about Russia and Putin or you're talking about this idiot here, the fact is they all want the same thing. They're all in collusion ultimately, because when you look at what they're investing and what they're stealing around the world, they're basically more working together than against each other, even though they want to give that impression. When it comes to local, I believe that, you know, the whole thing is set up anyway. So whether Mueller stays or whether he goes, the fact is it's going to end up like Iran-Contra, or it's going to end up like Watergate and like all the other so-called investigations. Nothing ultimately is really going to come out of it. And if anybody is so-called convicted, of course, they will get the slap on the hand and they will move on to being a lobbyist or working for another law firm or for the military.
Okay,
and I'm just saying that as a joke, because it's a good joke, because I just want to save you the pain of, you know, the hopeful thinking actually something good is going to come out of it.
I see. That is the sin of despair, isn't it?
Correct.
Okay, man. Listen, thanks for the reminder. There's work to be done, though.
The beat goes on.
Okay, take care. 231-8187. Brian.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, I'm okay.
Good. Well, I'm going to be real short and sweet. As far as it goes, yeah, the last guy was pretty much right. It doesn't matter. Left wing, right wing, it's all part of the same bird.
What kind of bird is it?
Our bird of democracy, it's supposed to be an eagle. Let's face the facts. It's more like a buzzard.
I'd say it's a mockingbird, but go ahead.
Right. My big issue isn't with so much of society, because the facts are is I'm not rich, I'm not wealthy, I'm a working schmo. I've come to find that happiness starts with yourself. The longer you blame and say these people are doing this and doing that, all you're doing is you're feeding into the same dragon drama, creating the same cycle that's already there. If you want happiness, it starts with yourself. You want change, it starts with yourself. And until people get that through their heads, it doesn't matter how many groups are out there as 3%ers or anything else. Nothing will change until you change yourself.
I always thought happiness was a guy called Joe. That's a song. Never mind. Okay. Thanks very much for the call.
Thanks.
All right. 231-8187. Who's on? Phil or Bill?
It's
okay.
Phil.
Yeah.
I want to find out what you think about this, because, you know, we often talk about fascists, and what I found about something interesting is that in essence, when a minority hijacks the majority, forces their allegiance, and through either silence, force, intimidation, whatever it is, this minority wreaks havoc in society. And I'm often wondering if that's in essence what Hitler was, you know, as a fascist. Did this person with a very small group hijack a very large system and send it into chaos? And I'm wondering if the rich, in essence, or corporations are in essence the modern day fascist. And it's just this idea, like, wow, how do we have a minority hijack an entire system the way they've done it? But I don't know what it looks like in the end. It's just a thought of mine. But anyway, I just wanted to know your thoughts.
Well, gosh, thank you for the question. Let me just think about that a minute. First of all, we have to understand, I use the term fascism a lot. People criticize me sometimes for that. Let's be clear. In real social sciences, in real sociology, history, and political science, fascism is a simple is a simply defined thing. It's a corporate state, that is, a state that takes the monopoly capitalist system and imposes it with a dictatorial direction under a leadership that is not interested in democracy, but rather interested in furthering the interests of that ruling class, and creating a system that has any amount of appearance of something else, but is in fact exactly that, a dictatorial system which helps the very, very richest. And in order to exist economically and politically, has to be expansionist. That is, it has to engage in direct or indirect war through economic or direct war means. That's what really classic fascism is. And we have many elements of it in our society. What makes us different is we still have, though not very effectively used and not very effectively involving, democracy at some levels, including the ability to speak freely. Here I am speaking freely. How effective we are, how often people are paying attention, how much they are being amused to death are all elements of the powerful struggle by a monopoly capital to keep us unaware. Recently, I mean, I've made the mistake of thinking, oh boy, television on cable and so on, oh, it's much better, we got naked people. Hello? That is not significant. Ideas are significant. The history, the real history of the struggles of people are significant. Most of what we see, most of what we are involved in is fantasies and romances and dreadful dramas that keep us entertained to death, while the real serious struggles go on unnoticed or underreported. That's what I think. So, 231-8187. Harry, you're on the air. Cheer me up.
Oh, cheer you up? Oh, I'm doing the opposite one.
This okay, one, go for
okay.
it.
I have two comments I'd like to make.
Okay.
A couple of weeks ago, you and Abe did a show on neutrality.
Net neutrality, yeah.
Yes. Well, what's come up now is a couple of attorney generals, I think in the state of New Jersey and New York and a few others, are finding out that the a lot of letters, a lot of emails coming in to the FCC was actually from bots. And they were...
You mean the Russian bots?
No, we don't know where these bots come from. They're investigating because they came in support of getting rid of net neutrality. And FCC was showing these emails. Look, we have all these emails in support of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But they were actually bots. What they were doing, they were investigating, because what they did was they sent emails using stolen email addresses. So they'll take your email and write an email for whatever purpose they want to, and without your knowledge. So this makes emails maybe a thing of the past, that if you want to contact your politician, you might have to either do it by phone or actual letter with a stamp.
A letter with a stamp? Is there such a thing still?
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Okay, no, I think I don't know the finest details of this. What I do know is that Russia has been engaging a lot with these bots. By the way, folks wondering, bot, it's short for robot. What it is essentially a structure that allows calls or emails to be reproduced and sent around totally without your actual awareness of the originator. So this is a thing that, for example, we now know that the Russians used during the election, and that continues to be used by them, but they are probably not the only players in that kind of game. And that's what you're referring to. And it is scary, and it is true also that, I hate to tell you this, you are suffering, all of us are suffering from a lack of clear privacy in our communications. But, again, it is still effective to write or talk to or even email your congresspeople and others in power, because resistance, as it grows, can become more and more a significant force. Anyway, that's what I think, and I think you're right about what you said about the bodies.
Okay, my next comment is,
okay,
this is even worse.
Oh, no.
It was, okay, KOIN News announced this about 2 weeks ago,
uh-huh,
that more people in Oregon are dying than being born.
Is that true?
Yes, and this is might be going all across the country.
Well, that might be good for the elephants. Oh, wait, we don't have elephants.
But Oregon only has 4,100,000 people in the whole state.
Uh-huh.
So what's going on is gentrification. And what does gentrification mean? People dying. So what happens to them in their later ends of life? And us baby boomers are now dying, so now more people are dying than are being born.
Well, that, on the other hand, looking at that phenomenon ecologically, if it's really that significant, it might be the foretelling, if you will, the forespisa, of a time of revitalization of the planet without us. So, you know, I'm not looking forward to that. I have family. I have friends. I'm concerned. I know people. I know people who know people. People are generally interesting, and they do produce very interesting stuff.
You're a baby boomer, correct?
I'm pre-babe.
Pre-babe.
Oh, okay. I'm old.
Oh, okay. So if our baby boomers are dying, and so are, well, anyway.
Yeah, I got your picture.
Yeah.
All right. No, it's an interesting idea. When we explore, what shall I call it, mega demographics or giant demographics, these patterns are difficult to come by, and they're not always clear. So I will accept the idea that Oregon is losing population for a variety of reasons. I don't know how long that'll be true, because also remember that people with money, not necessarily a lot of money, but with money, are coming here. And Oregon is changing, as is much of the country. And we are, from the point of view of people in crowded spots elsewhere, a very desirable place to live. So I don't know. That's my answer. I don't know.
Okay. Well, okay, that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. 231-8187. David.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
I wanted to sort of chime in support of your books about what you learned from reading Sartre. I think we haven't really seen, a mass push for real change. I don't know since when, the 60s perhaps. I mean, there have been, moments. There was the WTO and there's Occupy movement. But as far as really large numbers of population getting involved, we haven't seen that. So, and it's, I think that's a huge barrier. A barrier to that is this notion of hope. And I think assert that the notion of hopelessness
mm-hmm.
is, in fact, perhaps the biggest lie that our media perpetrates upon us. They carefully don't tell us about successes and, glorious moments. If they happen, say, a few states away, I mean, sure, the internet's going around that to some extent, but most people aren't digging that hard for real news. So if you're just watching the nightly news, you're not going to hear about some amazing protest. You're going to hear a negative spin on it. If you hear about it and make an effort and educate themselves, at whatever levels that they think are most important, we could overwhelm this whole crazy situation,
Okay. Well, listen, I have to let you go. You said one of the bad words, and
did I?
Yeah. It's an FCC rule, and I blotted you out. So, sorry. Call again. 231-8187. I wanted to address the idea of the news media and what they do. Aside from closing every news show on every station all the time with a happy story, they also do something else, which is the flattening of the news. The most horrible things, the most beautiful things, the most important things, the least important things are all flattened and laid down as if it was all just a normal spread of events. So you have no real sense of the movement of history. You have no real awareness of the horrors or the grand things that are happening. And this flattening has become so routinized in our public discourse, in our popular media, and in our news services, that we are numbed as horrors are brought forward to us. And of course, in the fictional news, as it were, in the fictional stories that are told, great horrors are presented, great excitements are presented, all of them to sensationalize and excite, but not necessarily to inform or to upgrade us. So this is a problem of the media itself, and it has become worse and worse and worse over the years. I just want to bring that up. I do appreciate your calls. I want to hear from you. 231-8187. I think we're still on the phone looking at people. No, we're not. Okay, I get to talk. Oh, you really want that. Yeah. Okay. A little bit more about this whole question of what is to be done, which, by the way, is a quote from Lenin. It is hard to measure the degree of problems we face, from environmental degradation to the failure of economic, political, and social justice, to the bad treatment of young people, the bad treatment of minorities, the bad treatment of women, and so on. But we do know that there has overall been a trend, and I'm going to only paraphrase Martin Luther King. There is a trend toward justice. There is a trend toward fairness. And we can never know the tipping point toward that. So, and that's, again, why struggle is so important. Besides which, it feels good. It's simply a way to get to know people. It's a way to be part of a community. It's a way to see some things successfully done. If you depend on the news services for all of this, you don't get a sense of what could be or is maybe happening. I know that I have been in the past fairly critical of the black bloc. I'm now reconsidering that criticism because I think that struggle takes many forms. And since the authorities all over the world are using this technique called kettling, where they simply surround a group of protesters, the ones they've chosen to surround, ignoring the others, and then force people to give ID, have their pictures taken, and so on, to get out of the kettle. Since that's become the custom of the police everywhere, we all need to understand that that struggle must be, to some degree, perceived as a real danger to authority. They wouldn't do it if it weren't necessary from their point of view. So reaction, punishment by the authorities is usually a sign that resistance is becoming effective. So we need to pay attention, and we need to be supportive, and we need to realize that struggle takes many, many forms, and we don't need to spend a lot of time in super criticism. We can criticize, of course, but we need to understand that we, all of us, do not know where the tipping point will come and how it will come. We can only argue rationally for change, making clear the things we believe to be necessary for that change. And then we need to be out there in the streets, on the email, on the phone, in the mail. We need to be relentless. We need to divide our week into, let's say, one day every week we put into action. That's not a lot, but it's something. And I hope that works for people. And I know all of us are working hard to make the nut, and it's hard to do it, and we have families, and we have responsibilities, and we have friends, and so on. But this is real. This is really happening. Without our involvement, without our active participation in the struggle, it sure as hell is not going to get any better. 231-8187. Okay. David is apologizing, and he's going to finish his thought. Go ahead.
I don't really know where I got cut off exactly, but sort of a continuation of that thought was, it can be frustrating to be active on a given issue and not succeed within a year or two or something.
Yeah.
But one of the most glorious moments of my life, or days of my life, was being part of the WTO protests.
And yeah, that was an exciting event and a big surprise to me.
It was a total surprise. That's the thing.
Right.
I had even been heavily involved in another, in Portland, elements of the same kind of work, but I didn't know how much organizing had gone on up in Seattle. I went up there thinking, well, this will be another interesting protest, maybe a few hundred people or something. No, boom, you had this thing across unions and all sorts of organizations and people flying in from Korea. And it was amazing. It was, you know, I mean, if you haven't been a part of something like that and felt that much success or power, you know, solidarity with your brothers and sisters, then you haven't really, you know, then you haven't really tried, perhaps. I mean, maybe you've been to some other things, but keep trying until you get to that, because, you know, if we all could go for that kind of feeling, it'll be great. You know, I mean, I can imagine feeling even better when we have something even bigger and stronger than the WCO, but it was very strong.
Yeah, and I think it's important to understand that, in fact, the movements are alive and well. They're just undercovered and undersupported. And yeah. And that means not that we are wasting our time, but rather that we need to put more time in.
Yeah, I mean, as one can. I mean, if you're saddled with raising four children, maybe you only have an hour or two a week. You know, you got to find your balance. But putting in that at least, and not just throwing up your hands entirely, and then lots of people have a lot more time. You know, you don't have to necessarily go to see, you know, four bands a week. You could go to three and put in a whole evening once or twice a week, or get more involved. But, you know, whatever is your comfort level. But I would encourage people to realize how much fun it is to work on this stuff, and how the people you meet are so alive and exciting to be involved with and know. You know, so yeah, it can be tough, but it can also be very rewarding, and you know, extremely. If we can,
well, absolutely. In fact,
progress, it's just amazingly rewarding.
In fact, as the song goes, you get to meet new friends and keep the old. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, and you know, and I would encourage people to, I mean, among other things, you know, variously work on election campaigns. You know, go knock on doors for an issue. That's really enlightening, and that's powerful. You're just each person you're educating, that's powerful. But also maybe go to jail for something. You know, do nonviolent civil disobedience. That's also powerful, and also in my experience, it's kind of fun. I mean, I don't say not totally fun, but it has its, as I say, it has its elements.
Okay.
And if a lot more people tried that, you know, that's actually, I think, in large groups, very powerful. It really kind of puts the power structure on a back foot. And suppose the numbers doubled and tripled and quadrupled and went to 100 times more who just said, screw it, you know, I can spend a night in jail. The more people that do that, when 100 people try to do something like that, half the time the police don't even want to try to arrest them because it's too much trouble, it's going to cost too much. If they do arrest you, then they don't want to spend a lot of time on trial. The trial is just going to publicize the issue more. They'll often just drop the charges against a large group. So, you know, jumping into a larger group on that is perhaps easier than one might imagine. And, of course, even small groups, I mean, it's very powerful. You get in the news. You know, your trial may generate more publicity.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I can remember when Witnessing for Peace against the nuclear testing and against nuclear war, way back when, was sometimes seven or eight people sitting down somewhere or something. Huh. And it really worked. It grew. And it grew not just because there were people involved, but because science proved that what people were saying, what we were arguing, was true, that nuclear war was untenable. And I wish the President of the United States knew that, and that what we were doing with nuclear testing was stupid and killing and awful. We actually, I think, had an enormous impact as science began to support us more and more. Anyway, I want to give some others a chance.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you for the call. John, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, a lot of this is a result of earlier this century, starting with 2000, when the Supreme Court made these decisions. First, December 12th, 2000, they stopped the counting in Florida to allow George W. Bush to be president.
Right.
Again, I'm doing this not in really chronologically order.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, corporations are concerned people. Another one, free money is what you would consider, they consider it's free speech.
Right.
And then I consider this, well, I don't know, just in the same category, that lying, not telling the truth, is a matter of free speech.
Mm-hmm.
And so those four things, I think, led to a lot of other doors being opening that we have now. Ex TV host for a reality show. So you have somebody who can lie and has all the money to expenses, and so voila, this is what you get, Frankenstein.
Okay, I agree with you. I think that the, in fact, the paid attention to is the fact that the Supreme Court has now pretty consistently created a situation where money talks and the rest of us walk. And I think it's very serious, and I don't know how that changes.
Okay, here's the next big thing.
Yeah.
I'm not an academic or a journalist, whatever. If they, the Supreme Court, ruled that gerrymandering is all right, it's constitutional. There you go. Then you have really one-party system.
Yeah.
Whatever. And this whole debt neutrality coming up, that's another icing on a cake, another layer.
Well, I think you're right. I think we are going to find ourselves, all of us, particularly those of us who are struggling for democracy and equality and environmental sanity, are going to find ourselves in a struggle where it isn't necessarily the case that the system, the government and the courts, are going to be helpful at all. So we need to be aware of that and the grave possibilities of that.
Yeah. Forget about Congress and the executive branch. It's the Supreme Court, which was not supposed to be the most powerful branch, but now they are.
Okay, I don't know whether I would argue powerful or not, but I think what you're saying in essence is correct. Nevertheless, we got to keep on keeping on. Hey, thank you for the call. 231-8187. This is KBOO, 90.7 on FM dial, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe ain't here, so it's just me, Joe. Please talk to me. Harry, you're on the air.
Oh, yes, Joe.
Yeah.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. A book that I've been... a lot of people are calling in and about struggling and resisting and stuff like that. It's got to be the way that we stay together. We don't fall in like an ant is trapped in an anteater's hole and falls in and gets swallowed up. But the book, Solving 9/11, I think somebody mentioned something about 9/11 a couple times, I've heard. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, yes. Well, what happened, it never was completely explained. This book by Christopher Bolin, and he's got a website, bolin.net or .com, something like that, and you can order the book, and it's at bookstores, but it's all off the shelves and stuff like that. A few libraries are getting the book back in. It's about what really happened, and how people that progressed through the military and went into that government of Israel worked together through the Mossad to down the World Trade Center, and it is all fact, irrefutable fact.
Well, I don't. I'm not an expert on this. I don't think that's an irrefutable fact. I think it's an interesting theory.
Oh, it certainly is.
Well, no, wait. Listen to me. There are many forces at work in this. Here's a fact. The fact is that people supported by the Saudi government absolutely were the people who did. Come on, man. These are the people who did the crime.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Now, whether a Mossad had a role, whether this or that group had a role, I can't say.
But here's the fact.
Now, listen. Here is a fact. The guys who did the hijackings of the planes, the guys who tried to destroy many things and were successful to a great extent, were definitely...
No, they weren't.
Okay, man. I'm going to have to let you go on that note. We'll see you later. We're running out of time. It's been fun.
Sure.
And I really appreciate all the calls. And I'm glad we had this interesting conversation. I hope you stay tuned to KBOO for the best in music and the best in public affairs. 231-8187, but it's too late to call me. Ha, ha.
Real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against Violence, disorder from sirens night and day. From the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Coming up this morning on KBOO, next on Alternative Radio, legendary MIT professor Noam Chomsky talks about the consequences and the backlash against neoliberalism. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. And at 10:15 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein talks to Richard Silverstein, discusses agreements the Trump transition made with the Israeli government before taking power. At 11 on stage and studio, DMA Roberts presents her documentary Talking with the Wind, The Mystery of Opal Whiteley, the story of a young woman from Cottage Grove, Oregon, who became the center of an international controversy. Today's weather calls for periods of heavy rain and gusting winds. You can expect temperatures in the mid-40s. KBOO keeps you informed and you can get involved. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee will meet December 21st at 4:30.
KBOO is in this year's Willamette Week Give Guide. KBOO has inspired and supported communities for nearly 50 years. You were an important part of this work, and your gift to KBOO builds fiercely just, creative, and independent radio. Join your friends and neighbors in supporting KBOO in the Give Guide. It's easy and secure. Help us make our $18,000 goal before December 31st. Go to the giveguide.org website and find